If the kid's lucky, maybe they'll give him a knife or a sharpened stick or a baseball bat. Sometimes the kid wins, sometimes he doesn't, but the odds makers haul in a fortune either way. And where do the kids come from? They volunteer for it. That's bull. No, it's not. If I wasn't around and you lived with Aunt Kathy when she was sick with the cancer, what would you have done? How much would you have risked to make sure she got enough food and medicine? Benny shook his head, but Tom's face was stone. Are you going to tell me that you wouldn't take a shot at winning maybe a month's worth of rations, or a whole box of meds for 90 seconds in a zom pit? That doesn't happen.
No.
I've never heard about anything like that. Tom snorted. If you did something like that, would you tell anyone? Would you even tell Chong and Morgy?
Benny didn't answer.
Tom pointed. I can go back there and maybe stop those guys. Maybe even do it without killing them or getting killed myself, but what good would it do? You think they're the only ones doing this sort of thing? This is the great rot and ruin, Benny. There's no law out here. Not since first night. Killing Zoms is what people do out here.
That's not killing them. It's sick.
Yes, it is, Tom said softly.
Yes, it is.
And I can't tell you how relieved and happy I am to hear you say it. To know that you believe it. There were more shouts and laughter from behind them, and another gunshot. I can stop them if you want me to, but it won't stop what's happening out here.
Tears burned in Benny's eyes, and he punched Tom hard in the chest.
But you do this stuff. You kill zombies.
Tom grabbed Benny and pulled him close. Benny struggled, but Tom pulled his brother to his chest and held him.
No, he whispered.
No.
Come on.
I'll show you what I do.
He released Benny, placed a gentle hand on his brother's back, and guided him back through the trees to the tall grass.
Chapter 11. They didn't speak for several miles. Benny kept looking back, but even he didn't know if he was checking to see if they were being followed, or looking with regret that they'd done nothing about what was happening. His jaw ached from clenching. They reached the crest of the hill that separated the field of tall grass from an upslope that wound around the base of a huge mountain. There was a road there, a two-lane blacktop that was cracked and choked with weeds. The road spun off toward a chain of mountains that marched into the distance and vanished into a heat haze far to the southeast. There were old bones among the weeds, and Benny kept stopping to look at them.
I don't want to do this anymore, said Benny.
Tom kept walking.
I don't want to do what you do. Not if it means doing that sort of stuff.
I already told you, I don't do that sort of stuff.
But you're around it. You see it. It's part of your life.
Benny kicked a rock and sent it skittering off the road and into the grass. Crows scolded him as they leaped into the air, leaving behind a rabbit carcass on which they'd been feeding.
Tom stopped and looked back.
If we turn back now, you'll only know part of the truth.
I don't care about the truth.
Too late for that now, Benny. You've seen some of it. If you don't see the rest, it'll leave you...
Leave me what? Unbalanced? You can stick that Zen crap up your language.
Benny bent and snatched up a shin bone that had been polished white by scavengers and weather. He threw it at Tom, who sidestepped to let it pass.
Screw you and your truth and all of this stuff, screamed Benny. You're just like those guys back there. You come out here all noble and wise and with all that bull, but you're no different. You're a killer. Everyone in town says so.
Tom stalked over to him and grabbed a fistful of Benny's shirt and lifted him to his toes.
Shut up, he said with a snarl. You just shut your damn mouth.
Benny was shocked into silence.
You don't know who I am or what I am.
Tom shook Benny hard enough to rattle his teeth. You don't know what I've done. You don't know the things I've had to do to keep you safe. To keep us safe. You don't know what I... He broke off and flung Benny away from him. Benny staggered backward and fell hard on his butt, legs splayed among the weeds and old bones. His eyes bugged with shock, and Tom stood above him, different expressions warring on his face. Anger, shock at his own actions, burning frustration. Even love. Benny. Benny got to his feet and dusted off his pants. Once more, he looked back the way they'd come and stepped up to Tom, staring up at his big brother with an expression that was equally mixed and conflicted. I'm sorry, they both said. They stared at each other. Benny smiled. Tom's smile was slower in coming. You're a total pain in my butt, little brother. You're a world-class jerk. The hot breeze blew past them. Tom said, If you want to go back, then we'll go back. Benny shook his head. No. Why not? Do I have to have an answer? Right now? No. Eventually? Probably. Yeah, said Benny. That's okay, I guess. Just tell me one thing. I know you said it already, but I really need to know. Really, Tom? Tom nodded. You're not like them, right? Swear on something. He pulled out his wallet and held up the picture. Swear on Mom and Dad. Tom nodded. Okay, Benny. I swear. On Mom and Dad. On Mom and Dad. Tom touched the picture and nodded. Okay, said Benny. Then let's go. The afternoon burned on, and they followed the two-lane road around the base of the mountain. Neither spoke for almost an hour, and then Tom said, This isn't just a walk we're taking, kiddo. I'm out here on a job. Benny shot him a look. You're here to kill a Zom? Tom shrugged. It's not the way I like to phrase it, but... Yes, that's the bottom line. They walked another half mile. How does this work? The job, I mean. You saw part of it when you applied to that erosion artist, said Tom. He dug into a jacket pocket and removed an envelope, opened it, and took out a piece of paper that he unfolded and handed to Benny. There was a small color photograph clipped to one corner that showed a smiling man of about 30, with sandy hair and a sparse beard. The paper it was clipped to was a large portrait of the same man as he might be now if he was a zombie. The name Harold was handwritten in one corner. This is why erosion portraits are so useful. People have pictures done of wives, husbands, children, anyone they loved, someone they lost. Sometimes they can even remember what a person was wearing on first night, and that makes it easier for me because, as I said, the dead seldom move far from where they lived or worked. Guys like me find them. And kill them? Tom answered that with a shrug. They rounded a bend in the road and saw the first few houses of a small town built onto the side of a mountain. Even from a quarter mile away, Benny could see zombies standing in yards or on the sidewalks. One stood in the middle of the road with his face tilted toward the sun. Nothing moved. Tom folded the erosion portrait and put it in his pocket, then took out the vial of cadaverine and sprinkled some on his clothes. He handed it to Benny, then dabbed some mint gel on his upper lip and passed the jar to his brother. You ready? Not even a little bit, said Benny. Tom loosened his sword in its scabbard, then led the way. Benny shook his head, unsure of how exactly the day had brought him to this moment, and then followed. Chapter 12.
"Won't they attack us?" Benny whispered.
"Not if we're smart and careful. The trick is to move slowly. They respond to quick movements. Smell, too, but we have that covered."
"Can't they hear us?"
"Yes, they can," Tom said. "So once we're in the town, don't talk unless I do. And even then, less is more, and quieter is better than loud. I found that speaking slowly helps. A lot of the dead moan, so they're used to slow, quiet sounds."
"This is like the scouts," Benny said.
"Mr. Feeney told us that when we're in nature, we should act like we're part of nature."
"For better or worse, Benny, this is part of nature, too."
"That doesn't make me feel good, Tom."
"This is the rotten ruin, kiddo. Nobody feels good out here. Now hush, and keep your eyes open."
They slowed their pace as they neared the first houses. Tom stopped and spent a few minutes studying the town. The main street ran upward to where they stood, so they had a good view of everything. Moving very slowly, Tom removed the envelope from his pocket and unfolded the erosion portrait.
"My client said that it was the sixth house along the main street," Tom murmured. "Red front door and white fence. See it? There, past the old mail truck."
"Uh-huh," Benny said without moving his lips. He was terrified of the zombies that stood in their yards not more than 20 paces away.
"We're looking for a man named Harold Simmons. There's nobody in the yard, so we may have to go inside."
"Inside?" Benny asked, his voice quavering.
"Come on."
Tom began moving slowly, barely lifting his feet. He did not exactly imitate the slow, shuffling gait of the zombies, but his movements were unobtrusive. Benny did his best to mimic everything Tom did. They passed two houses in which zombies stood in the yard. The first house, on their left, had three zombies on the other side of a hip-high chain-link fence. Two little girls and an older woman. Their clothes were tatters that blew like holiday streamers in the hot breeze. As Tom and Benny passed by them, the old woman turned in their direction. Tom stopped and waited, his hand touching the handle of his sword, but the woman's dead eyes swept past them without lingering. A few paces along, they passed a yard on their right in which a man in a bathrobe stood, staring at the corner of the house as if he expected something to happen. He stood among wild weeds and creeper vines that had wrapped themselves around his calves. It looked like he had stood there for years, and with a sinking feeling of horror, Benny realized that he probably had. Benny wanted to turn and run. His mouth was as dry as sand, and sweat ran down his back and into his underwear. They moved steadily down the street, always slow. The sun was heading toward the western part of the sky, and it would be dark in 4 or 5 hours. Benny knew they could never make it home by nightfall. He wondered if Tom would take them back to the gas station, or if he was crazy enough to claim an empty house in this ghost town for the night. If he had to sleep in a zombie's house, even if there was no zombie there, then Benny was sure he'd go completely mad cow crazy. "There he is," murmured Tom, and Benny looked toward the house with the red door.
A man stood inside, looking out of the big bay window. He once had sandy hair and a sparse beard, but now the hair and beard were nearly gone, and the skin of his face had shriveled to a leathery tightness. Tom stopped outside of the paint-peeling white picket fence. He looked from the erosion portrait to the man in the window, and then back again.
"Benny," he said under his breath.
"You think that's him?"
"Mm-hmm," Benny said with a low squeak.
The zombie in the window seemed to be looking at them. Benny was sure of it. The withered face and the dead pale eyes were pointed directly at the fence, as if it had been waiting there all these years for a visitor to come to the garden gate. Tom nudged the gate with his toe. It was locked. Moving very slowly, Tom leaned over and undid the latch. The process took more than 2 minutes. Nervous sweat ran down Benny's face, and he couldn't take his eyes off the zombie. Tom pushed on the gate with his knee, and it opened. "Very, very slowly," he said. "Red light, green light, all the way to the door." Benny knew the game, though in truth he had never seen a working stoplight. They entered the yard. The old woman in the first garden suddenly turned toward them. So did the zombie in the bathrobe. "Stop," Tom hissed. "If we have to make a run for it, head into the house. We can lock ourselves in and wait until they calm down." The old lady and the man in the bathrobe faced them, but did not advance. The tableau held for a minute that seemed an hour long. "I'm scared," said Benny. "It's okay to be scared," said Tom. "Scared means you're smart. Just don't panic. That'll get you killed." Benny almost nodded, but caught himself. Tom took a slow step, then a second. It was uneven, his body swaying as if his knees were stiff. The bathrobe zombie turned away and looked at the shadow of a cloud moving up the valley, but the old lady still watched. Her mouth opened and closed, as if she was slowly chewing on something. But then she too turned away to watch the moving shadow. Tom took another step and then another. Benny eventually followed. The process was excruciatingly slow, but to Benny it felt as if they were moving too fast. No matter how deliberately they went, he thought it was all wrong. That the zombies, all of them up and down the street, would suddenly turn toward them and moan with their dry and dusty voices, and that a great mass of the hungry dead would surround them. Tom reached the door and turned the handle. The knob turned in his hand, and the lock clicked open. Tom gently pushed open the door and stepped into the gloom of the house. Benny cast a quick look at the window to make sure the zombie was still there. Only he wasn't. "Tom!" Benny cried. "Look out!" A dark shape lunged at Tom out of the shadows of the entrance hallway. It clawed for him with wax-white fingers and moaned with an unspeakable hunger. Benny screamed. Then something happened that Benny could not understand. Tom was there, and then he wasn't. His brother's body became a blur of movement as he pivoted to the outside of the zombie's right arm, ducked low, grabbed the zombie's shins from behind, and drove his shoulder into the former Harold Simmons' back. The zombie instantly fell forward onto its face, knocking clouds of dust from the carpet. Tom leaped onto the zombie's back and used his knees to pin both shoulders to the floor. "Close the door," Tom barked as he pulled a spool of thin silk cord from his jacket pocket. He whipped the cord around the zombie's wrists and shimmied down to bring both its hands together to tie behind the creature's back. He looked up. "The door, Benny, now!" Benny came out of his daze and realized there was movement in his peripheral vision. He turned to see the old lady, the two little girls, and the zombie in his bathrobe lumbering up the garden path. Benny slammed the door and shot the bolt, then leaned against it, panting, as if he had been the one to wrestle a zombie to the ground and hogtie it. With a sinking feeling, he realized that it had probably been his own shouted warning that had attracted the other zombies. Tom flicked out a spring-bladed knife and cut the silk cord. He kept his weight on the struggling zombie while he fashioned a large loop, like a noose. The zombie kept trying to turn its head to bite, but Tom didn't seem to care. Maybe he knew that the zombie couldn't reach him, but Benny was still terrified of those gray, rotted teeth. With a deft twist of the wrist, Tom looped the noose over the zombie's head, catching it below the chin, and then he jerked the slack so the closing loop forced the creature's jaws shut with a clack.
Tom wound more silk cord around the zombie's head, so that the line passed under the jaw and over the crown. When he had three full turns in place, he tied the cord tightly. He shimmied down the zombie's body and pinned its legs and then tied its ankles together. Then Tom stood up, stuffed the rest of the cord into his pocket, and closed his knife. He slapped dust from his clothes as he turned back to Benny. "Thanks for the warning, kiddo, but I had it."
Holy sh—
"Language," Tom interrupted quietly. Tom went to the window and looked out. 8 of them out there.
Shouldn't we board up the windows?"
Tom laughed. "You listen to too many campfire tales. If we started hammering nails into boards, the sound would call every living dead into the whole town. We'd be under siege."
"But we're trapped."
Tom looked at him. "Trapped is a relative term," he said. "We can't go out the front. I expect there's a back door. We'll finish our business here, and then we'll sneak out nice and quiet and head on our way." Benny stared at him and then at the struggling zombie that was thrashing and moaning.
You just—
"Practice, Benny. I've done this before. Come on, help me get him up." They knelt on opposite sides of the zombie, but Benny didn't want to touch it. He'd never touched a corpse of any kind before, and he didn't want to start with one that had just tried to bite his brother.
"Benny,"
Tom said, "he can't hurt you now. He's helpless." The word helpless hit Benny hard. It brought back the image of old Roger, with no eyes, no teeth, and no fingers, and the two young women who tended to him, and the limbless torsos in the wagon.
"Helpless," he murmured.
"God!" "Come on," Tom said gently. Together they lifted the zombie. It was light, far lighter than Benny had expected, and they half-carried, half-dragged it into the dining room, away from the living room window. Sunlight fell in dusty slants through the moth-eaten curtains. The ruins of a meal had long since decayed to dust on the table. They put it in a chair, and Tom produced the spool of cord and bound it in place. The zombie continued to struggle, but Benny understood. The zombie was actually helpless.
Helpless.
The word hung in the air, ugly and full of dreadful new meaning.
"What do we do with them?"
Benny asked.
"I mean, after."
"Nothing. We leave him here."
"Shouldn't we bury him?"
"Why?" "This was his home. The whole world is a graveyard. If it was you, would you rather be in a little wooden box under the cold ground or in the place where you lived? A place where you were happy and loved?" Neither thought was appealing to Benny. He shivered even though the room was stiflingly hot. Tom removed the envelope from his pocket. Apart from the folded erosion portrait, there was also a piece of cream stationery on which there were several handwritten lines. Tom read through it silently, sighed, and then turned to his brother. "Restraining the dead is difficult, Benny, but it isn't the hardest part." He held out the letter. "This is." Benny took the letter. "My clients, the people who hire me to come out here, they usually want something said. Things they would like to say themselves but can't. Things they need said so they have closure. Do you understand?" Benny read the letter. His breath caught unexpectedly in his throat, and he nodded as the first tears fell down his cheeks. His brother took the letter back. "I need to read it aloud, Benny. You understand?" Benny nodded again. Tom angled the letter to the dusty light and read. "My dear Harold, I love you and miss you. I've missed you so desperately for all these years. I still dream about you every night, and each morning I pray that you've found peace. I forgive you for what you tried to do to me. I forgive you for what you did to the children. I hated you for a long time, but I understand now that it wasn't you. It was this thing that happened. I want you to know that I took care of our children when they turned. They are at peace, and I put flowers on their graves every Sunday. I know you would like that. I have asked Tom Amura to find you. He's a good man, and I know that he will be gentle with you. I love you, Harold. May God grant you his peace. I know that when my time comes, you will be waiting for me. Waiting with Bethy and little Stephen, and we will all be together again in a better world. Please forgive me for not having the courage to help you sooner. I will always love you. Yours forever, Claire. Benny was weeping when Tom finished. He turned away and covered his face with his hands and sobbed. Tom went over and hugged him and kissed his head. Then Tom stepped away, took a breath, and pulled a second knife from his boot. This one, Benny knew, was Tom's favorite. A double-edge, black dagger with a ribbed handle and a 6.5-inch long blade. Benny didn't think he would be able to watch, but he raised his head and saw Tom as he placed the letter on the table in front of Harold Simmons and smoothed it out. Then he moved behind the zombie and gently pushed its head forward, so that he could place the tip of his knife against the hollow at the base of the skull. "You can look away if you want to, Benny," he said. Benny did not want to look, but he didn't turn away. Tom nodded. He took another breath, and then thrust the blade into the back of the zombie's neck. The blade slid in with almost no effort into the gap between the spine and skull, and the razor-sharp edge sliced completely through the brainstem. Harold Simmons stopped struggling. His body didn't twitch. There was no death spasm. He just sagged forward against the silken cords and was still. Whatever force had been active in him, whatever pathogen or radiation or whatever had taken the man away and left behind a zombie, was gone. Tom cut the cords that held Simmons' arms and raised each hand, placing it on the table, so that the dead man's palms held the letter in place. "Be at peace, brother," said Tom. He wiped his knife and stepped back. He looked at Benny, who was openly sobbing. "This is what I do, Benny." Part 2. Zombie Cards. Collect the whole set. A quote from Richard Pryor. Everyone carries around his own monsters. Chapter 13. For 5 days after they got back, Benny did nothing. In the mornings, he sat in the backyard, invisible in the cool shade of the house as the sun rose in the east. When the sun was overhead, Benny went inside and sat in his room and stared out the window. As the sun set, he'd go downstairs and sit on the top step of the porch. He didn't say more than a dozen words. Tom cooked meals and laid them out, and sometimes Benny ate, and sometimes he didn't. Tom did not try to force a conversation. Each night he gave Benny a hug and said, "We can talk tomorrow if you want to." Nix came over on the third day. When Benny saw her standing on the other side of the garden gate, he just gave her a single small nod. She came in and sat down next to him. "I didn't know you were back," she said. Benny said nothing. "Are you okay?" Benny shrugged but kept silent. Nick sat with him for 5 hours and then went home.
Chong and Morgie came by with gloves and a ball, but Tom met them at the garden gate.
"What's up with Benny?"
Chong asked. Tom sipped from a cup of water and squinted at sun-drowsy honeybees hovering over the hedge.
"He needs a little time, is all."
"For what?"
asked Morgie. Tom didn't answer. The three of them looked across to where Benny sat staring at the grass that curled around the edges of his sneakers.
"He just needs some time," Tom repeated.
They went away. Nix came again the next day, and the next. On the sixth morning, she brought a straw basket filled with blueberry muffins that were still hot from the oven. Benny accepted one, sniffed it, and ate it without comment. A pair of crows landed on the fence, and Benny and Nix watched them for almost an hour. Benny said,
"I hate them."
Nix nodded, knowing that the comment wasn't about the crows or anything else they could see. She didn't know who Benny meant, but she understood hate. Her mother was crippled by it. Nix could not remember a single day when her mother didn't find some reason to curse Charlie Pink Eye or damn him to hell. Benny bent and picked up a stone, and for a moment he looked at the crows as if he was going to throw the rock at them, the way he and Morgie always did. Not to hurt the birds, but to scare a noise from them. Benny weighed the stone in his palm, then opened his fingers to let it tumble to the grass.
"What happened out there?"
Nick said, asking the question that had hung burning in the air for a week. It took Benny 10 minutes to tell her about the rot and ruin. But Benny didn't just talk about Zoms. Instead, he talked about three bounty hunters on a rocky cleft by a stream in the mountains. He spoke without emotion, almost monotone. But long before he was finished, Nix was crying. Benny's eyes were hard and dry, as if all of his tears had been burned away by what he'd seen. Nix put her hand on Benny's, and they sat like that for more than an hour after he was done, watching as the day grew older. As they sat, Nix waited for Benny to turn his hand, to take hers in his, to curl his fingers or thread them through hers. She had never felt closer to him, never believed in the possibility of them more than she did then. But the hour burned away and turned to ash, and Benny did not return her grip. He merely allowed it. When the evening crickets began singing, Nix got up and went out through the garden gate. Benny hadn't said another word since he'd finished telling his tale. Nix really wasn't sure that he knew she'd held his hand, or that she'd left. She cried all the way home, quietly, to herself, without drama. Not because she had lost Benny, but because she now knew that she never had him. She wept for the hurt that he owned, a hurt she could never hope to remove. Benny sat outside until it was fully dark. Twice he looked at the garden gate, at the memory of Nix carefully opening it and closing it behind her. He ached. Not for her, but because she ached for him. And he could feel it now. He'd always known it was there, but now, somehow, for some indefinable reason, he could feel it. And he knew he wanted her. He wanted to break his oath with Chong and forget that they were just friends, and he wanted a lot of things. But the world had changed, and when he had the chance to take her hand, he hadn't. Why not? He knew that it had nothing to do with the oath, or with friendship. He knew that much, but the rest of his mind was draped in weird shadows that blinded his inward eye. Nothing made sense anymore. He could feel the heat of her touch on his hand even though she was now out of sight.
"Nix," he said.
but she was gone and he had let her go. He got up and slapped dirt from his jeans, then looked up at the yellow August moon that hung in the sky beyond the garden fence. It was the same moon, but it looked different now. He knew it always would.
Chapter 14. The following morning was cool for the first day of September. Benny lay in bed and stared out the window at the dense white clouds stacked tall above the mountains. The air was moist with the promise of rain. Benny was awake for more than an hour before he realized that he felt better. Not completely. Maybe not even a lot. Just better. It was the last week of summer break. School started next Monday, although with his new job, that would only be half days. He lay there, listening to the birds singing in the trees. Tom once told him that birds sing differently before and after a storm. Benny didn't know if it was true, but he could understand why they would. He got up, washed, dressed, and went downstairs for breakfast. Tom set out a plate of eggs for him, and Benny ate them all and then scavenged the frying pan for leftovers. They ate in silence almost to the last bite before Benny said, "Tom, the way you do it, does anyone else do it that way? Closure, I mean." Tom sipped his coffee. "A few. Not many. There's a husband and wife team up north in Haven, and there's a guy named Church who does it in Freeland. No one else here in Mountainside."
"Why not?"
Tom hesitated, then shrugged. "It takes longer."
"No," Benny said. "Don't do that."
"Do what?"
"Sugarcoat it. If this is the way it is, if I'm going to have to be a part of it, don't jerk me around. Don't lie to me."
Tom set down his cup of coffee and then nodded.
"Okay.
Most don't do it this way because it hurts too much. It's too..." He fished for a word.
"Real?"
Benny suggested.
"I guess so," said Tom.
He tasted the word.
"Real."
"Yeah, that about says it." Benny nodded and ate the last piece of toast. After a while, Tom said, "If you're going to do this with me..."
"I didn't say I was. I said if."
"So did I.
If you're going to do this with me, then you have to learn how to handle yourself.
That means getting in better shape and learning how to fight."
"Guns?"
"Hand-to-hand first," Tom said. "And swords. Wooden swords in the beginning. We'll start right after school."
"Okay,"
Benny said.
"Okay, what?" "Okay."
They didn't speak again that morning. When Benny got to the garden gate, he stood looking at it, as if it was a dividing line between who he had been before Tom had taken him out into the ruin, and who he was going to be from now on. For a week, he had been unable to open that gate, and even now his hand trembled a little as he reached for the latch. It opened without a crash of drums or ominous lightning forking through the clouds. Benny grinned ruefully, then headed down the lane toward Chong's house. Chapter 15.
"The zombies are coming!"
Morgie Mitchell yelled that at the top of his voice, and everyone ran. Morgie ran side by side with Benny and Chong, the three of them blocking the pavement to keep the other kids from getting there first. It was a disaster, though. Zach Mathias deliberately tripped Morgie, who went flying and whose flailing fingers caught the back of Moby's pants and accidentally pulled them down to his knees. Moby wore stained drawers, and with his pants around his knees, he couldn't manage the next step, and he went down. So did Morgie. A crowd of kids hit the pair, who were already on the ground, but they were in motion, and everyone knew there was no hope. They all went down. Only Benny, Chong, and Zach were still running. Zach was halfway down the block. Benny looked back, hesitated, grabbed Chong by the sleeve, mentally said, "Screw it," and ran even faster. In the direction of the zombies. They were at Lafferty's General Store. The zombie cards had arrived.
"Too bad about Morgie," said Chong.
"Yeah," agreed Benny. "Nice kid. He'll be missed." They sat on the top step of the wooden porch in front of Lafferty's. A shadow fell across them.
"You guys are a couple of total jerks," said Morgie.
"Eek," said Chong dryly. "It's a zom. Quick, run for your life."
Benny sipped from a bottle of pop and burped eloquently. Morgie kicked Chong's foot, hard, and sat on the wooden step between his two friends. He looked at the stack of cards that lay on the step between Chong's sneakered feet. There was a similar stack, two packs still unopened, in front of Benny. Wax paper wrappers were crumpled on the top step.
"The guy said they're sold out already," he complained grumpily.
"Yeah, those darn kids, huh?" murmured Benny.
"He said you two monkey bangers bought the last couple of packs."
"Guy's lying," said Benny.
Morgie brightened.
"What? He has some?"
"We bought the last 12 packs," said Chong.
"I kinda hate you guys."
"He's going to start crying," Chong said to Benny in a stage whisper.
"He's going to embarrass himself," agreed Benny.
"What he's going to do," said Morgie, "is start kicking your asses."
"Eek," said Chong through a yawn.
Benny pretended to scratch his ankle, but then he moved his sneaker and there were 4 packs of zombie cards in a neat stack, the wax paper wrappers still sealed. Morgie made a grab for them, ignoring the grins on his friends' faces.
"I still hate you," he said as he tore open the first pack. "And yet," said Chong, "we'll find a way to pick up the pieces of our shattered lives and struggle on."
Morgie made a very rude gesture as he sorted through the cards. Zombie cards were one of the few luxuries the boys could afford. In the next town, 40 miles away, along the line of the mountains, 2 brothers had set up a printing business. All hand-crank stuff, because no one trusted electricity anymore, even when they could get it to work. The printers did it old school. Offset printing in 4 colors, and they did a quality job. The zombie cards were printed on heavy cardstock, 10 cards to a pack. On the front of each card was a portrait of famous bounty hunters, like J-Dog, Dr. Skills, Sally Two Knives, or the Mekong brothers. Heroes of First Night, like Big Mike Sweeney, Billy Christmas, or Captain Ledger. Someone from the zombie war, like the historian or the helicopter pilot. Famous zombs, like Machete Head, the Bride of Coldwater Spring, or the Monk. Or random cards of famous people who had become zombs. On the back of each card was a short bio in the name of the artist. Benny's favorite card was of Ben, a tall African-American man who was painted in a heroic pose, swinging a torch at a swarm of zombs who were trying to get past him to attack a blonde woman who cowered behind him. The bio said that the image was based on an eyewitness account of a valiant but tragically futile struggle against zombs in Pennsylvania. The artist had captured the nobility of the man with a torch and had made the zombs look particularly menacing, an effect enhanced by the stark shadows and light from the torch's flaring flame. It was one of the rarest cards, and Benny was the only one of his friends who had it. He also had a complete set of the bounty hunters, including Charlie Mathias and the Motor City Hammer. He still liked Charlie and the Hammer, but as much as he denied it to himself, reserve bubbled inside him when he looked at their cards. He'd already sorted through his collection, looking for the 3 bounty hunters he'd seen in the ruin, but they weren't there. It reinforced Benny's belief that their actions were not in any way typical of the bounty hunters Benny knew personally. Tom had to be wrong about that. He said nothing to his friends about what Tom had said, but he shot a quick glance at Zack, who sat on the store's porch, fanning through the 12 packs of cards he'd bought. Zack saw him watching and gave him a strange smile, then bent over his cards. Benny shrugged, absorbed in his memories of the ruin. So far, he'd only told Nyx, and he hadn't seen her since she left the garden the day before. Her absence was like an empty hole in his gut, but he refused to think about it. Chong had the largest collection of zombie cards, mostly because he had two cousins who collected them, and they traded doubles. Morgie and Benny had a good-sized set. Nix only had a few. She was poor and wouldn't take handouts, although if Benny gave her his doubles, she always accepted.
"Are you going to save any for Nix?"
Chong asked as Morgie tore open his second pack.
"Why?"
Morgie asked absently as he peered at the writing on the back of a card that showed a police officer in San Antonio, firing at Zoms as he crashed his patrol car through a knot of them. The figures were tiny on the card, but the action was explosive, and Morgie was totally absorbed by it. Chong and Benny exchanged a look over his bowed head, then shrugged. Morgie could be as dense as a mud wall sometimes. They opened all of their packs of cards and sat in the shade of the porch, organizing them and reading the backs, swapping doubles with one another, bragging about cards they had and that the others didn't. Benny smiled and joked and chatted with the others, but as he sorted through the cards, he could feel how false and fragile his smile was. He wanted to feel the way he used to feel, and hated that he had to fake it.
"Hey, you even listening?"
Morgie asked, and Benny turned to him, hearing the question as if it were an echo but not remembering what he was asked.
"What?" "Joe Attentive," murmured Chong. "I asked, what's with you and Nix?"
"Nix?" Benny tensed.
"What about me and Nix? She was over your house every day this week, and now she's not hanging around with us. She hasn't missed a card day all summer. What's up?"
Morgie wore a smile, but it went about a millimeter deep. Benny forced his shoulders to give a nonchalant shrug.
"No, it's cool. She was just being a friend." "What kind of friend?"
"Just a friend, Morgie." But Benny could see that answer wasn't going to cut it. He sighed. "Look, we all know Nix has a thing for me, and you have a thing for Nix. Big news flash, I don't have a thing for Nix, and the reason you haven't seen her around the last 2 days is that I think she knows it and her feelings are hurt. I'm sorry, but there it is. So if you want to make your move, now would be a pretty good time."
"No, it wouldn't," said Chong without looking up from a card he was reading.
The others looked at him.
"Nix is probably feeling like total crap right about now. She could use a friend, but what she doesn't need is someone breathing down her neck or following her like a horny dog." "What are you saying?"
said Morgie, eyes narrowed. Chong turned to him.
"What part of that was unclear?" "I don't just horn dog after her. I like Nix. A lot."
Chong merely grunted and continued to read his card. Morgie punched Benny's shoulder.
"Ow! What the hell was that for?"
Benny demanded.
"For screwing with Nix's head," Morgie shouted. "Now she's going to be all moody and girly, crying in her room and writing in that stupid diary of hers."
"Good God," said Benny, appealing to Chong and the universe for help. Chong tried to hide a smile as he pretended to read the zombie cards. They sat in silence for 5 minutes, each of them absorbed with the cards to varying degrees, each thinking about Nix but pretending not to. Chong tapped him with an elbow, and when he turned, his friend held out a card so he could see the picture.
"You're almost famous," he said.
The picture was that of a young man, standing with his back to a bullet-scarred wall, but instead of a gun, he held a katana in his hands. Tom.
"Oh, man, don't do this to me," Benny said.
Chong smiled.
"I thought you and Tom kissed and made up. I thought you were best buds now."
"Yeah, and pigs can tap dance," muttered Benny, taking the card. He flipped it over and read the back aloud.
"Card number 113. Tom Amura.
Tom, a resident of Mountainside, is a first-class bounty hunter who prefers to be called a closure specialist. He's known throughout the rot and ruin for his quiet manner and lightning-fast sword." Benny handed the card back. I think I'm going to throw up, he said. Chong pretended to read off the back of the card. Tom's brother Benny is known throughout the world for his noxious farts and lack of personality. Man, they got your number. Get stuffed, Benny suggested. Morgy took the card and tried to riff off Chong's remark, but beyond a few disjointed vulgarities, could come up with nothing biting.
I am so going to bust Tom on this, said Benny. On his zombie card, for God's sake. Who does he think he is?
Chong slid the card into his thick pack.
What's with you? You're supposed to be working with him. Didn't you guys go on some kind of vision quest thing out into the ruin? You came back all moody and introspective. What happened?
I got over it, said Benny.
No, I mean, what happened out there?
Benny just shook his head.
Come on, dude, said Morgy. Give us all the gory details.
It was the wrong choice of words, and Benny felt his stomach turn and his brain started flashing overlapping images of Harold Simmons, the blind eyes of Old Roger, and the squirming torsos of the dismembered Zoms in the wagon. Chong caught his change of expression, and before Morgy could say anything, he handed the last unopened pack to Benny.
Do the honors. Maybe this one will have your own ugly face on it.
Benny faked a smile and tore open the wax paper. The first few cards were doubles they all had. There was one new one, a celebrity Zom that the bio said was Larry King, but Benny couldn't tell the difference between the before and after pictures. He turned over the last card. It wasn't a bounty hunter or a famous person who'd gone Zom and been bagged and tagged. No. This was one of the elusive chase cards, one of only six special cards that showed up so rarely that Benny, Chong, Morgy, and Nix only had two between them.
What is it?
Morgy asked as he tried to lean closer, but Benny moved the card away. It was a weird reflex action, and even as he did it, Benny suddenly felt as if he stepped out of this moment, this place, and stood somewhere else. Some place where the wind blew hot and dry, and the birds did not sing in the dying trees. Where bones lay bright white on the ground, and the sky was as hard and dark as the bluing on a gun barrel. Benny stared at the card. Not at the words, but at the image. It was a girl, about his own age, maybe a year older. She wore the rags of old blue jeans and roughly made leather moccasins. Her blouse was torn and patched and too small for her, and the pattern had once been bright with wildflowers, but was now so faded that it looked like flowers seen through mist. She had hair that was so thoroughly sun-bleached it looked snow white, and her skin was tanned to a honey brown. The girl wore a man's leather gun belt, which had a small pistol below her left hip, and a knife in a weather-stained sheath on her right. She carried a spear, crudely made from a long piece of quarter-inch black pipe wrapped in leather, and topped with the blade from a Marine Corps bayonet. Behind her was a heap of dead zombies. The painting was incredibly lifelike, more like a photo than a painting, but there hadn't been a working camera for years. What held Benny's attention, what riveted him, was her expression. The artist must have known her because he caught her with a blend of emotions on her beautiful face. Anger, or perhaps defiance, tightened her full lips into an inflexible line. Pride lifted her chin. But her hazel eyes held such a deep and ancient sadness that Benny's breath caught in his throat. He knew that sadness. It haunted his brother's eyes every day, and since returning from the small village on the mountainside, that sadness darkened the eyes that looked back at him from the bathroom mirror, morning and night. This girl knew. This girl must have seen some of the things he'd seen, maybe worse. She'd seen them with eyes that could never see things the way the bounty hunters did. This girl knew. And Benny knew that she knew. She knew in ways that Nix couldn't. There was no name in the caption bar at the bottom of the card. Just these words. The Lost Girl. Chong leaned over. He started to make a joke, but he caught Benny's expression and kept his words to himself. Morgi was a few steps slower to the plate than Chong. He snatched the card out of Benny's hand.
Nice rack. Almost as big as Nix's.
Benny's hand moved so fast that it surprised everyone. One second his fingers were open and empty, and the next they were knotted in the front of Morgi's shirt.
"Give it back,"
Benny said in a voice that was more like Tom's. Older, uncompromising, hard. Morgi wore half a smile for half a second. Then he saw the look in Benny's eyes, and surprise, tinged with fear and a spoonful of hurt, blossomed in his eyes.
I mean, sure, man, he said, tripping over the words. Sure. I was just...
Benny took the card from between Morgi's fingers. It was bent but not creased, and Benny smoothed it on his thigh.
I'm sorry,
Morgi said, completely confused by what had just happened. Benny looked at him without seeing him, then leaned over to peer at the card. Morgi started to say something else, but Chong, out of Benny's line of sight, gave a tiny shake of his head. A shadow fell over them, and they looked up to see Zack standing on the top step, staring down at the card. He grunted once, mumbled something unintelligible as he shoved his own cards into his pocket, then clumped down the stairs and headed home. They ignored him. To Benny, Chong said,
"Who is she?"
Benny just shook his head.
"Read the back."
Benny turned it over and slowly read the small block of printed text. Chase card number 3. The Lost Girl. Legends persist about a beautiful girl living wild and alone in the rot and ruin. Many have tried to find her, but none have. And some never returned. Who is the Lost Girl?
Doesn't tell you much, said Chong.
Morgi grunted.
Charlie Mathias says she's just a myth.
Benny's head whipped around.
You've heard of her? Sure, everyone's heard of her.
I haven't, said Benny.
I haven't, said Chong.
Do you guys even live in the same town as me?
Said Morgi with exasperation.
We heard about her years ago. Little girl with snow-white hair, hiding out in the ruin, eating bugs and stuff. Completely wild. Can't speak English or nothing. What do you call it? Feral?
Benny shook his head, but Chong said,
Yeah, that's ringing a faint bell.
He closed his eyes for a moment.
Back in the scouts, Mr. Feeney told us about her. We were like 9 or something. It was that weekend we all camped out in Lashner's field.
I was sick, said Benny. I had the flu, remember?
Right, said Chong slowly.
What'd Feeney say about her?
Nothing much. He told a spooky story about people trapped in a farmhouse with zombies all around. Everyone died, but the ghost of the youngest daughter keeps haunting the hills, looking for her folks.
Uh-uh, said Morgi. That wasn't how it went. The people in the farmhouse kept going out, one by one, to try and get help, but no one ever came back until only the little girl was left. She's supposed to still be there.
I heard she died, insisted Chong.
Not according to Mr. Feeney, said Morgi.
I remember that she was a ghost. Everyone died in the story I heard.
Everybody dies in every story, said Morgi.
If everybody died,
said Benny as he turned the card over to look at the picture again,
then who told the story?
They thought about it.
Maybe one of the trackers found the place and figured it out, suggested Chong.
They considered it. There were several trackers in town, some of whom used to be cops or hunters before first night.
No,
said Benny, shaking his head slowly.
No. If she died as a little girl,
Then why draw her as a teenager?
Morgie nodded.
And why give her boobs?
Jeez, Morgie, said Chong. Don't you think of anything else but boobs?
No, Morgie said, looking genuinely surprised.
Why would I?
Benny turned the card over and stared at the back. In the lower left corner was the artist's name.
Rob Sachetto.
Hey, said Chong. Isn't that the guy you tried to get a job with? The erosion artist. Has the blue house by the reservoir.
Yeah.
So, go ask him. If he did this, then he must have talked with someone who saw her. I mean, if this is real.
It's real. Benny shuffled through the rest of the cards. There were only three others that had been painted by Sachetto. Charlie Mathias, the Motor City Hammer, and Tom Amura.
Are you two...
Morgie began, but before he could finish, Benny was on his feet and heading toward the reservoir on the far side of town. He left the zombie cards behind, except for the one with a picture of the lost girl.
What's his malfunction? Morgie asked.
What? He fall in love with this chick just because she's built?
Chong said,
Do yourself a favor, Morg. Next time you're staring at a girl's boobs, look up. You'll be shocked to learn it, but there's going to be a face up there. Nose, mouth, eyes. And behind the eyes is an actual person.
Yes, Confucius, I know. Girls are people. Wisdom of the ages. Nyx is a girl and therefore a person. I know that.
Really?
Said Chong as he watched Benny vanish around a corner.
Maybe if you looked her in the eyes, she'd know that you know.
He got to his feet, shoved his hands down deep into his pockets, and headed home. Morgie watched him go, wondering what the hell had just happened. Chapter 16. There was a sign on a pole that read, Rob Sachetto, Erosion Artist. It hung from two lengths of rusted chain and creaked in the hot western wind. The outside of the house was painted with murals of lush rainforests, filled with exotic birds and brightly colored frogs. Benny had barely glanced at the murals when he'd come to apply for a job, but now he lingered to look. The paintings were filled with life. Monkeys, insects, flowering plants, but no people. The artist opened the door on the second knock. He wore low-slung jeans that seemed to be held together by dried paint, and a plaid shirt with the sleeves cut off. His feet were bare, and he had a steaming cup of coffee hooked on one multicolored finger. He peered down at Benny.
"You're that kid," he said.
Benny nodded.
"I thought I told you that I couldn't use you.
I'm not here about the job."
"Okay. Why are you..."
The artist's voice trailed off as Benny held out the card. Sachetto looked at the image and then at Benny.
"Who is she?"
Benny asked. Shutters dropped behind the artist's eyes.
"It's just a card, kid. They're sold in every settlement in California."
"I've been out to the rotten ruin."
When that didn't seem to do much, Benny added, "With my brother, Tom."
"Nothing."
"Tom Imura."
The artist studied him, stalling by taking a long sip of his coffee.
"I need to know who she is," Benny said.
"Why?"
"Because I believe in her. Because she's real. My friends think she's dead or that she's just a ghost story, but I know she's real."
"Yeah? How do you know that she's real?"
"I just know."
Sachetto drained his cup.
"Do you drink coffee, kid?"
"Sure."
"I'll brew another pot. This might take a while." He wasn't smiling when he said it, but he stepped back to let Benny enter. The artist paused to look at something that caused his whole body to tense, and Benny turned to see the Motor City Hammer crossing the street toward the livery stable. However,
The hammer was looking directly at Sachetto, and he wore a peculiar smile on his ugly face. The artist's house was clean but not neat. Sketches were thumbtacked to the walls. Partially finished paintings stood on half a dozen easels. A wheeled wooden table held hand-mixed pots of paint. They passed through into a tiny kitchen. Sachetto waved Benny to a chair while he went to fill the coffee pot. Every house in Mountainside had an elevated cistern that drew upon the reservoir and rainwater to feed the faucets and toilets. Because of some quirk of luck during the influx of first-night survivors, Mountainside had 23 plumbers and only one electrician. In terms of electricity, they were a half-step out of the Stone Age, but there was always water to flush the john and fill the kettle. Benny was cool with that.
"Tom Amura, huh?" Sachetto murmured.
"I can see it now, but not when you were here the first time. I knew Tom had a little brother, but I always assumed he'd look more Asian." Benny nodded. Both of Tom's parents were Japanese, so Tom had straight black hair, light brown skin, black eyes, and a face that showed only the expressions he wanted it to show. Benny's mother had been a green-eyed, pale-skinned redhead who looked like every one of her Irish ancestors. Benny got an even split of the genes. His hair was straight, but it was medium brown with red highlights. His eyes were a dark forest green. His skin was pale, but he took a good tan. However, where Tom's body was toned to a muscular leanness, Benny was merely lean. "We're half-brothers," he explained. The artist digested that.
"And he took you out into the ruin?"
"Yes."
"Why?"
"I guess I'm his apprentice now. I'm 15.
"Did he take you to Sunset Hollow?"
"No, but he mentioned it. Or someone mentioned it to us. I don't know what it is, though."
"If Tom didn't tell you, then it's not for me to do it," said Sachetto, taking two clean mugs from the cupboard.
Before Benny could press him on it, the artist said, "What did you see out there?"
"I don't know if I should talk about it."
"Kid, here's the deal. You tell me about the ruin, about what you saw out there, about what Tom showed you, and I'll tell you about the lost girl." Benny thought about it. The smell of brewing coffee filled the little kitchen. The artist leaned back against the sink, arms folded against his chest, and waited.
"Okay," said Benny,
and he told the artist everything. It was the same story he told Nix. The artist was a good listener, interrupting only to clarify a point and to press him for more precise descriptions of the three bounty hunters who had been torturing the Zoms. Sachetto was on his second cup of coffee by the time Benny finished. The coffee in Benny's cup was untouched and cold. When Benny was finished, the artist sat back in his chair and studied Benny with pursed lips.
"I think you're telling me the truth," he said.
"You think? Why would I lie about stuff like that?"
"Oh, hell, kid. People lie to me all the time, even when they don't have a reason to. Folks that want an erosion portrait but don't have a photo of their loved one tend to exaggerate so much, the picture comes out looking like Brad or Angelina."
"Who?"
"Doesn't matter. Point is, people lie a lot. Sometimes out of habit. Not many people are good at telling the truth. But what I meant just now was that nearly everybody who comes back from the ruin lies about what they've seen."
"What kind of people?"
"You see, that's the kind of question that makes me think you've actually been there. Most people would ask, what kind of lies? You see the difference?"
Benny thought he did. "Tom says that people here in town want to believe their own version of the truth."
"Yes, they do. They don't want to know the truth, and even when they say that they do, they don't ask the right questions."
"What do you mean?"
"There are a lot of very obvious questions about our world that nobody around here seems to want to ask."
"Like why we don't expand the town?
suggested Benny.
Uh-huh.
And why don't we try and... what's the word? Reclaim what we've lost.
I know. Since we got back, I've been thinking a lot about that.
I'll bet you have. You're Tom's brother after all.
Okay. Now what about that? After what happened, I guess my opinion about Tom has changed a bit.
But
I still don't understand why everyone thinks Tom is so tough. He's even on one of the zombie cards.
You haven't seen him in action?
All I saw him do was hogtie one skinny zom.
That's it?
Sure. He ran away from the three bounty hunters.
Ran away? Echoed the artist, looking amused.
Tom Imura, running away.
He suddenly threw his head back and laughed for a whole minute, his thin body shaking, tears gathering in the corners of his eyes. He slapped the tabletop over and over again until the cold coffee in Benny's cup jumped and spilled.
Holy crap, kid,
Sachetto gasped when he could talk.
God, I haven't laughed that hard since Mayor Kirsch's outdoor shower blew away in the Santa Ana, leaving him standing stark naked with soap dripping off his...
What's so freaking funny? Interrupted Benny. The artist held up his hands in a sorry gesture, palms out.
It's just that anyone who knows your brother, I mean really knows him, is going to react the same way if you tell them that Tom Imura was afraid of anything.
He ran away.
He ran away because you were there, kid. Believe me, if he'd been alone...
He left the rest unsaid.
You don't live with them, Benny said irritably. You don't know what I know. You don't know what I've seen.
Sachetto shrugged. That pretty much goes both ways. You don't know what I know, or what I've seen.